Hello, regulars. You're listening to Floor by Floor, a Tower of God podcast discussing the latest chapters of the webtoon. I'm Vierlane.
And I'm Reziat.
And we're your hosts. Welcome to the 12th floor, where we'll be discussing chapter 577, or season 3, episode 160. But first, of course, our recap.
Gororo gathers everyone in the briefing room and says they are going through the largest aquarium in the tower located inside the mothership. Traumare once built a domed city and put a family branch in it. However, they got wiped out and their city destroyed because they upset Traumare. Lilial tries to justify it, but Gororo tells her they were actually wiped out because they missed one meal for Traumare's favorite divine beast. He asks her if that's a crime worth drowning a whole city for, and she doesn't respond. Gororo goes on that they found a broken gate in the ruins of the underground city, and they have secretly fixed it. That's the gate they will escape through. The submarine enters the aquarium, and it's full of divine beasts. Kun says his body feels like it's going to get crushed, and El Baba tells him that the deep levels of the aquarium have a Shinsu density matching the upper levels of the tower. A beep suddenly goes off, and Gororo wonders if Traumare released the One. In a bedroom, Lilial and Shilial are tending to their mother. Bomb looks up after feeling a presence and notes something is coming. Outside, a massive multi-headed divine beast comes up behind a submarine and tries to swallow them. Cha calls out that a divine beast is attacking the submarine and is ready to fight it, but Yuri tells him they can't interfere because of the family head's rules. Bomb rushes past him and tells him that he will go out there. If that divine beast is a challenge from the family head, then he has to face it head on. He climbs out of the hatch and stands on top of the submarine. Gororo hears that Bomb has stepped out of the submarine and is shocked. He points out that that's the divine beast who destroyed the underwater city, plus the Shinsu pressure is too strong. Kun tells him not to worry about the last part because Bomb isn't affected by Shinsu pressure. Outside the submarine, Bomb forms a Shinsu bow and arrow. He understands that the divine beast was trapped here based on someone else's memories. Bomb shoots off a bunch of Shinsu arrows and they envelop the divine beast and reappear outside the mothership. All the divine beasts from the aquarium are now free. Hima Slime, who is running through the garden, spots the divine beast she's been looking for and calls it Master Gyaro. Tiara and Matt, who are also in the garden, witness the flood of escaping divine beasts. We also find out that Kayab is still alive. Traumare says that Bomb's answer to his proposal is freedom. He doesn't remember who, but he feels like he knows someone who thinks like Bomb and wants to find out who that is. Gustong leaves, telling Traumare he'll meet him in a week at the match location. We cut to Bomb looking at the now empty aquarium. He thinks to himself that perhaps the family heads are like the divine beasts that were in there, but trapped in the giant tower. If that's the case, then he must. His thought is cut off by a POV change to Kieran asking Traumare if they should recapture the escaping divine beasts. Traumare says there is no need. He may leave the aquarium empty for a while because he is only looking to capture one. The submarine approaches the underwater city, and there are a lot of tombstones on the ground. As the submarine crosses the gate, Bomb hears the voices of the fallen spirits. Avenge us, they say. Kill Traumare. Gustong appears in front of Tiara and Matt. Tiara asks for forgiveness for failing the mission, but Gustong says things went according to plan. He tells them to inform the army that any members of the Lopobiev military that come into their area are to be killed on sight. In 1 week, the divide will become the beginning of destruction.
And that was last week. This week, we're hit with a doozy of a chapter, and surprisingly, it's mostly set up for future events. Although I'm quite appreciative of Siu making these really long chapters, I hope he's taking care of himself.
Looks like we got another shift in the art style, and I have a feeling we'll continue to see that for a while.
It doesn't look too bad. And yet, despite it being a setup chapter, there's actually quite a bit to chew on here. So let's get started. The chapter cuts straight to the action this week. Kieran gets a report that Gororo has escaped. Kieran says he's aware and will take care of Gororo's end. Kieran thinks about Kun's deal and is upset that it's throwing off his plans. He asks about Lobodon's location, and the caller says they've predicted it to be the place where the Lopobia insider told them. Kieran issues more orders and calls it the beginning of the war. They are proceeding towards destruction. We're then shown the submarine exiting on the 44th floor. Gororo says if he had followed the original plan, he'd have joined his comrades around now, but he didn't expect Kieran to backstab him. He thinks back to Bomb shooting off his Shinsu arrow and how he could be mistaken for a god with a power like that. except that he doesn't believe in them. We then cut to Shiliel talking to her mother as she cuts an apple for her. She urges her to stop pretending to be asleep and wake up already. She understands her mother prioritized Liliel, but she's not upset about that. She'll make use of her ill fate. In that regard, she seems to be like her mother. As she leaves, she spots Kun waiting for her outside in the hallway. He asks about her mother, but Shiliel calls him out for fake pleasantries and asking about something he's not interested in. "You're curious about Maria, aren't you?" she asks him. He's curious about what Maria is scheming, he corrects. Shiliel contemplates telling him despite it being a secret, but if they protect her family until the end of the war, she'll tell him, she decides. If he doesn't think he can do it, then he should be okay with her walking down the aisle holding his friend's hand. Kun is not amused at that comment and flips her off. "Then he has no choice," Shiliel tells him. Right then, Liliel calls Shiliel via pocket and tells her it's an emergency. The Grey Wolf branch leader is meeting with the Irregular, and they need to know what it's about. They walk into Elbaba bowing and begging Baum. Elbaba is asking that Baum pledge allegiance to the family head, and that if he has feelings for Elaine, then he can marry her and join the branch. Baum tells him he won't go to the Lopobia, and Elbaba yells at him to help Elaine fix her mistake because even he can't forgive her for it. Elbaba calls her an embarrassing daughter, but Baum tells him that's not true. Elaine isn't an embarrassment and is happy. Elbaba's outraged at the selfish idea of happiness. The branch became the target of criticism and was scattered, broken, and on the verge of extinction. If it meant forgiveness, he would kill Elaine as atonement to the family head. Baum then tells him to watch his mouth. Elaine spent a long time in the Namehunt station as atonement. She sacrificed herself, yet always wished her family well. Baum then grips the front of Elbaba's shirt and drags him close. Baum yells at him that maybe he's had enough children to have lost his love for them, and that's why he's willing to kill the child for failing. But a child only has one father their whole life. As her father, he should have protected her by all means necessary. Shiliel wonders why Baum is so angry over someone else's business. There isn't anyone in the 10 families who would act like a parent. Right then, interestingly, we cut to the Snake Master waiting outside Laura's room, asking her to listen to them. She said she'll listen if they'll agree to her one request. We're brought back to Elbaba and Baum. Elbaba shoves off Baum and tells him he thought he would be nice to him because the family head had taken interest in him, but he's just a regular who doesn't know his place. Elaine is no longer his daughter, and he won't expect anything more of her. As he walks out, Liliel mocks him for looking so pitiful. Shiliel asks him if he wanted recognition bad enough to bow to the Irregular. Elbaba starts a question, but stops when he realizes the princesses are in a worse position than him with the family head. He turns away from them, thinking that this would be a good opportunity to take care of them without anyone noticing. He'll kill the two princesses when the time is right. Baum stares at him leaving, thinking that he looks suspicious. We then cut to the Popidal mothership, where Bellarir is laughing at Kun's insane plan. Does he think this is a board game club? The war won't be solved so easily. Rachel says it's so like AA to find a solution between all the forces against him. Bellarir says it's too bad. Kun will struggle some more until he realizes that the fracture that has already formed will keep spreading until it swallows everything in the tower. In the middle area, near the defensive lines of the Lopobia mothership, portals open up and Popidal ships cross over. The guards are confused that they are coming over without warp gates. The Popidal ships then begin their assault. Kieran informs Tramurai of the attack. Tramurai wonders if it could be the Shinwon Ryu and decides to go see it for himself. Popidal members texting when Tramurai appears on the field. They text that they're going to fight him, and the group chat lights up with jokes and cheers. As they order the attack, Tramurai summons a giant goat beast named Elgor. He orders it to be gentle so they can take the big ship as a sample. Tramurai feels it for a brief moment, a power close to Shinwon Ryu from that particular ship. He decides to test it by having Elgor destroy the left flank. The Pobedal fleet starts to retreat, and Tramurai sends out silver eels to stop the ships. The large ship disappears, but Tramurai is fine with having captured the small ones. That is, until they self-destruct. He asks Kieran if they can track down where they warped to. Kieran tells him it's not impossible if they consider the general direction. Tramurai orders Kieran to send him the location of the nearest cluster of Pobedal forces. The hunt begins, and he will do it by himself. He wants the branch heads to go find the irregular before the match. Tramurai then warps in front of a Pobedal base and has his beasts wreck it. We finally cut to Bomb walking down a hallway in the submarine. He suddenly gets a headache and retreats to his room shared with Kun and Rock. The Leviathan comes out and tells him that it was a good idea to deal a blow to Tramurai by freeing the divine beasts. Tramurai is someone unnatural and shouldn't exist in this world. But then again, he thinks the same of Bomb. If Bomb brings him the power of the three water dragons in Tramurai's possession, there might be a way to defeat Tramurai. "I will help you," the Leviathan says. "Pierce Tramurai's heart with me. Metamorphosize my power." And the chapter ended there. With that all said, yes, this chapter was long. So with the chapter open, we do get confirmation that Kieran is indeed playing two hands here. He was aware of Gororo and that Branch's plans through being a part of it, if only to protect Tramurai, but it seems he's manipulating some strings for a plan of his own. Things seem to be leading towards the Leviathan again. At least we'd like to think so. Hopefully sometime soon we'll get a reveal on what he's planning.
I love that we just keep adding more questions on top of questions on top of questions. When are we going to get answers?
Little by little. And interestingly enough, this chapter did have a couple of answers. But one of the big things in like the first third of the chapter was a mention of Kun Maria Jihad. Ring the alarm bells, folks, because it seems we're heading into some Kun developments potentially after this. I'm just as curious as Kun as to what she's up to and what bearing this has on the current plot. But I have to say that middle finger panel was glorious. I've already seen a few memes of it floating around, and it's definitely another one for the collection of Twitter reaction images.
We need more shots of Kun being a punk.
Or just general iconic Kun. Girl Scout Kun. Snarky Kun. I'm not a light bearer because I'm bad at fighting Kun. Scammer Kun, and now we have F.U. Kun. I am quite curious about this mention of Maria, though, especially with that conversation that Bomb has with the Leviathan. A couple of people were tossing about a potential for another Kun-Bomb separation arc. As we know, the others are largely weaker than Bomb, and these are things that only Bomb himself can really gather and conquer and whatnot in his own ways. Could he be having to go out on his own? Will we have Kun separated with the regulars? Or, on the flip side, could it be that this becomes a mission involving everyone on board the sub, or between Kun, Bomb, and Dorsey and Rock? Maybe Yuri, who knows? We unfortunately didn't get that much more information on that, because it suddenly switches to Bomb and Elaine's father, Albaba, seeming to have a discussion in Bomb's room. That whole thing was pretty awkward. I'm not sure it's all that big a loss for Elaine to have been officially disowned here. She has more to gain in continuing being divorced from her family, I think. Whether this will be communicated to her or not seems like it'd be an off-screen thing, but I figure Bomb is honorable enough to pass the news along when they next meet, or she'll find out through her own channels. But Elaine herself did resolve to say goodbye to her parents at the end of the NHS arc. Perhaps she knew how they'd react after her freedom was bought now that we've seen her father's behavior. We could take solace in that somewhat and consider Elaine to be truly free now with Bomb's help. Bomb once again slotting into his role as a liberator, demonstrated in two different ways here. And jeez, that Bomb who has not had actual parental figures in his life, schools someone so much older than him on what he should do in that role? Man, his ideal family beliefs are admirable. I think he'd be a really great dad. But getting that insight as to how the branch heads think of their children, and well, how the 10 great family leaders think of their children, It's just disappointing. The entire tower is just filled with selfish people driven by power and the need for power. And, well, understandably, the tower functions by the law of the jungle, but that's just disgusting.
No wonder everyone is so messed up. Everyone needs therapy.
So much therapy. And of course, we all know that Obaba's plan to kill Shilliel and Lilliel isn't going to happen. Dude needs to give up while he's ahead. Seems both Shilliel and Baum realize he's up to something, immediately, at least. Do you have any ideas for what Laura may ask of the Snake Master? She wants to use him to do her a favor, and of course, the Snake Master would do anything for her.
I don't know if it's something sinister or not. I feel like she wouldn't ask him to do something that terrible, but I'm still really curious. What could it be?
An obvious conclusion would be something about protecting Shilliel and Lilliel. Based on her reaction to seeing the Snake Master there with Shilliel, I almost want to say it may have something to do with Shilliel herself. What if she wants to get rid of Shilliel as well? And unknowingly, not only is Shilliel being threatened by El Baba, she'll be threatened by the Snake Master as well. Or maybe it's just getting them out of there. I find it highly probable that Laura is working with Lovadon as well. There's no way she doesn't really know what her grandfather is working on. I mean, it's her grandfather. But it's also possible that she's completely in the dark. Who knows? But that would be an interesting wrench in of the works. If she too was also involved in Lovadon's plan, unknowingly to everyone else. But once again, we don't get much info on that either, because suddenly we get Bellarir and Rachel showing up in this chapter. We find out that someone's updating Bellarir from the upper echelons of the Popadel, as he's already gotten word through the Emily messaging system about Kuhn's plan to have Gustong and Chomrai duke it out over chess. Honestly, his reaction is a lot like the fandom's. Chess? Really? And that it actually worked? What?
He knew the perfect game that these nerds would fight over.
We could have super shiny laser battle out in the sky, or, well, we can just knock over wooden pieces and haha, checkmate over and over. Okay.
They might as well play Uno. They'll hate each other just as much at the end.
But also I could imagine them just in the center of a battlefield, things exploding and all manner of just nonsense going on around them, where they're just sitting there chill, playing chess. One of them declares victory and suddenly the battle stops. It's still really funny though, because Bellarir himself is laughing at it and making fun of it. And it was interesting to see Rachel pop in and actually defend Kuhn. Or at least tell Bellarir not to laugh too hard at him because he's found his own way out of the war despite all of the powers against him. I'm a little curious about her reaction to Kuhn's plan though. As it seems, she doesn't care about what he does, because he's irrelevant in the greater scheme that they're working on. And I want to know how exactly she has positioned him into this plan of theirs on the fly. I figure, of course, she knows that Kuhn only cares about Baum. Maybe this is just manipulating Baum in a way that allows him to be dangled like a carrot on a stick to lure the 10 great family heads into precarious positions. Who knows, but I do think her outfit's super cute.
It's pretty plain. So it suits her.
It is, but like, it has some extra cuts to it that fit her well, and it's just different from what she usually wears. We've always seen her in like pullovers or just unflattering clothing, and this one just seems like she's a little more dressy, even though the design is a little plain. And I'll take that over reading Bellarir's texting, because he completely texts like a dude, bro. No cap, for real? Oh god. It's hilarious and somewhat in character, but my goodness.
It's pretty cringe, but I'm not surprised.
The texting is interesting, though, because it ties Bellarir and Rachel directly into the ongoings between Tromrai's army and Gustong's army. We end up cutting to the newish, but not really new, Popadel guy leading the attack on the Lopobia front lines. I gotta say, the ship's design was really neat. Props to the 3D artists on the team. They've created quite a few intricate pieces since the hiatus's return. And on top of this really cool looking ship, we see that Bellarir is communicating with the new guy and getting updates on Chomrai through him. And it seems Chomrai is easily lured in by the promise of ooh, shiny, when it comes to things. New irregular, new divine beasts, new ship designs and Shinwan Ryu imitations. The last of which I find intriguing because it could be said, and likely has been explicitly said by the God of Guardians on a Hell Train way back when, if I remember correctly, that Bom Shinwon Ryu is somewhat of an imitation of the real thing. He hasn't fully mastered it yet. That aside, though, during all these ships and things blowing up, the biggest takeaway from this particular segment of the chapter is, if you missed it, confirmation of the Pobedal family sigil. It wasn't really overt. It was just stuck on the ship on the side in just a panel. It wasn't even pointed out or anything. You just had to be sharp-eyed to notice it. And it's a little funny that it's that one, because Gustang seems hung up on Blossom, since the sigil is a yellow and pink striped banner on the bottom row of the family sigils panel. For those that don't remember, Gustang married Eurasia Blossom, one of the other family heads, and, well, they're bitter divorcees now. But we've seen that branch members of the Eurasia family, the Fonsikal family, which Laure and Irure are from, they have pink hair. And pink seems to be a dominating color among the Eurasia, at least has been hinted through some chatter in the chapters and some of Siu's blog posts, which are now gone, but, you know, they remain in memory. But it's exciting to see that we get another family sigil confirmation, and that very much narrows down what the rest of them could be and who they belong to. On that topic, that completely debunks the theory that the 20th floor was controlled by the Pobedal family. For those that don't remember, on the 20th floor, one of the very first, if not the first panel of season 2, we see the 20th floor laid out and a family sigil on top of the administration building for the tests. A lot of people assume that it was the Pobedal sigil, but now it seems it's not. Hopefully we find out soon. We have a lot of families that still haven't been introduced and a lot of sigils that need answers.
We got plenty of room for family drama.
And seeing how things are panning out with family drama, yeah, there's a whole lot more to come. And right after that reveal, we get Chomrai introducing us to another of his 7 divine beasts directly under his control. A giant goat man? Sometimes I think Siu would have loved being a Pokemon designer if he had been given the opportunity. Either way, we get to see a little of how Chomrai is being lured out towards where Gustang wants him. And it seems things will go down sooner rather than later, because Chomrai's come banging at Gustang's door demanding answers as to what he's up to. I'm going to pray there's a little bit of a lore drop between them, or something that will satisfy all the loud fans complaining about the fight between Gustang and Chomrai having been cut off. It seems they're in a pretty clear open area where we can see some real action. And then opinion might end up swinging in the other direction where there's too many laser battles and not enough happening. Please, guys, let's see you cook. And then finally, right at the end of the chapter, that conversation between Bom and Leviathan. What do you mean there's 3 dragons?
It sounds like he's getting a quest for some video game now, and he has to go collect the 3 dragons in order to defeat the big bad.
Part of me thinks he's starting to seriously contemplate actually letting the Leviathan out. That he's realizing he's going to need some real serious firepower to continue here. But it's highly dangerous, so I'm pretty worried about that. What if he actually does it, and it takes control of him? Or what if its power is so explosive that it breaks free? What if something about that changes Bom inherently? Now, it could be a product of his circumstances, but certainly after the fight with White, Bom has taken on a bit more of a serious edge. We can kind of see the Viole coming out of him lately. And we got a smidgen of a hint that White's crown has affected Bom's abilities somewhat. Exactly how is still yet to be answered, but it is slowly integrating itself with the thorns. I really want to know how the Leviathan will work with Bom's powers beyond what we've seen with the Blue Thrissa and its power boost to Bom's baseline Shinsu with the Water Dragon ability. So, with all that said, are we heading towards another training arc? Is he really going to get a quest from some old man to go kill God? Does this start to lean towards everything happening in the Lopo Bia ship becoming irrelevant after some words with Gustang? Or does this truly position Bom in direct conflict with Chomrai? Taking Bom into consideration here, I'm going to go ahead and theorycraft a little bit on how this could end. I want to say it'll be with Chomrai being liberated from his nightmares by Bom, and possibly any lies Jahad may have fed them if we continue with that angle. Maybe Chamurai won't join Gustang or join anything at all, but he may have his eyes reopened to the truth and get a chance to have a long, hard look at everything he and the others have done. I think Bom would try to let him live, or try his best to. Perhaps Chamurai and the Lopo Bia would become an individual force slowly beginning to drive positive change in the tower, very beginning of that tidal wave of change. Or he might just die and everything burns in hellfire, who knows? Only Siu has the answers for that, and hopefully we'll get something next week.
We know he's not adverse to killing people, but the impact has to be big enough.
I do fear that if Bom believes this would truly make the tower a better place, Chamurai might be dying at the end of this arc.
It's been hinted at so many times, it's starting to feel inevitable. Somebody has to die, and so much would be freed with Chamurai's end. But, as you've said, it could also be the release of his memories and him becoming a better person. Either way, whatever Siu is cooking smells good.
Indeed, I'm hungry. Just please, Siu, don't make it so Bom finally gets justification to kill people. That wouldn't really make him any better than anyone else, which would lead to a very interesting reader conflict. We want Bom to be a good person, but we too would also end up accepting his justification to kill people. Imagine that. That's messed up. Anyway, we'll find out next week. Well, thanks for joining us, regulars. We'll see you on the next floor.
Goodbye.
Have a good one.